And if you do this budgeting right, everyone in the company should be aligned. And it's a long, thoughtful exercise, but everyone should be aligned and excited. And it should culminate in a company mission and statement.
Hello and welcome to the Gross Profit Podcast. My name is James Kennedy. I'm the CEO and co-founder at Procurement Express. We're the software that helps you manage your spend with magical features. But that's not what we are here to talk to today about. Instead, we're here to talk about budgeting. Budgeting is something, if I'm very honest, we have only just turning the corner on. Ronan, who's on my board, has told me for years, which is, you know, James, it'd be really great to have a budget going this year. I've kind of a little bit not given all the reverence that maybe I should have. And now I'm starting to get religion. I'm starting to see for myself and our own business the importance of budgeting. So I needed someone really at the top of their game to come along and coach me on that, answer the questions that I have about it so that we can try and become world-class at how we deploy our budgets at Procurement Express. And I thought it might be useful for you as a listener if you're trying to run an operation and you have targets you're trying to hit. Maybe you've tried to roll out budgets before. Maybe they're a little bit lip service, but maybe you and I can learn something together here. So in order to do that, I've invited along Brian Rafael from Propeller Industries, where he is acting as the CFO. So Brian, thanks very much for coming along. Maybe you could tell us a little bit about you and your background and what Propeller does, just to set the scene.
Sure, of course. Happy to be here. Thanks for having me. Propeller Industries is a firm that offers what's called a full stack finance function to startups, predominantly venture capital backed startups, but really startups and small companies of all kind of shapes and sizes. That full stack runs from a CFO to bookkeeping level. We kind of aim to be your finance function. I am one of about 10 or 11 CFOs here at Propeller that services our clients and acts as a fractional CFO to all of our clients. My background includes being a full-time CFO for startups. It also includes the first half of my career was spent in private equity, sort of at the other side of the table, where you're demanding budgets from all your portfolio companies, and you're evaluating them. And then I spent the latter half of my career operationally helping run small businesses as a CFO, and now the last few years more as a consultant. So Propeller is a mid-sized consulting firm, about 100 people and about 400 clients. Yeah.
Okay. So even though that's, you know, mid-size in general, that would be a kind of a leader, one of the bigger players in the startup space. So I know you have a lot of relevant experience. Funny to hear that you've worked for PE side as well, because that brings its own complexion to it. Especially a lot of listeners might be thinking, wait, what happens after the exit if there ever is? So, okay, let's get into it. So as I explained at the beginning, you know, budgeting is one of those things that we have talked about and we set out. And like Mike Tyson says, everyone has a plan until you get punched in the face. And that's definitely been our experience when it comes to our aspirations for what we're going to do in a year versus what we're actually going to do. But I guess my religion has come here from the realization that if you really want a goal, like if you want a concrete goal, which is as a CEO, where sometimes our job is to set a North Star, set a goal, set whatever, you know, you can kind of evangelize, you can, you know, you can do a belly dance, you can do whatever you want to try and get people on that goal, but it's the budget that is the meat on that on those bones. And it's the budget that actually moves towards that goal. Where you put the budget actually puts the effort. And that's why it's so important. Yet, you know, if, you know, getting a good budget done is tricky. So let's start with this one. A kind of basic question is, you know, they call it budgeting season, often Q4 in the year. You know, why is it a budgeting season? And is that the way to look at it?
I probably wouldn't pitch it as that internally, because it would just scare everybody, right? I mean, nobody loves to hear it's like budgeting time, budgeting season. But the truth is, it's a good way to think about it, because it really is like budgeting should be a conversation. It should be a conversation among stakeholders and leadership of the company. And to think of it differently, I mean, I would almost take the word, but it's really, company planning. It's strategic planning for the company. I mean, we spend most of our year sort of putting out fires, tactically handling things, making a lot of small decisions, maybe some big decisions. But this is saying, hey, we're going to take a month or maybe even 2 months and really bring the leadership to the table. Let's talk big picture. Where do we want to go? New markets, new products, new pricing. This is your time to do that. And the beauty of the budget is because it is a conversation amongst all stakeholders are really anyone who touches any piece of the budget on the revenue or expense side, and say, okay, we've come together as a leadership team, and this is what we really want to do this year. We want to enter a new market, want to expand our presence here, expand our, of course, it'll include revenue growth and all the usual things. But really, it should be driven by, sort of big picture strategic thinking and a mission for the next year. Something to get the company excited about. Hey, we're doing this new thing, or we're going to stop doing this old thing, which everybody hates, or whatever it is. And then it's about sort of this back and forth, like ping pong match almost between stakeholders and leadership saying, okay, here's where we want to go, but can we actually get there? Let's like brass tacks. Let's actually look through line items, look through our sales funnel and our marketing funnel and understand what's really possible here. And it's just back and forth between all the parties, trying to get to a good place that people are excited about and believe is doable. It shouldn't be unachievable. It should be achievable and doable, but it should also be hard work, and it should also represent a change in direction. As human beings, the older we get, the harder it is to like change direction, right? And I think this is a moment in time to consciously come to the table and say, hey, we are going to change direction here. Maybe a lot, maybe a little, but definitely something. And how do we do it? And why are we doing it? And why should we all be excited about it? And it's a really, it should act. I mean, listen, budgeting is almost by definition a bit of a grueling process, a long process, but it should be a rewarding process as well. And a lot of things should come out of it.
So you touched on something straight away there, which is what we're not doing. So the budgeting right now is me and my co-founder sort of huddling together over a sweaty spreadsheet somewhere, sort of taking a, we'll talk in the leadership team about where we want to go, what the goals are. And then we'll kind of, when we, Rich and I are looking at the ones and zeros, we're suddenly sometimes our mind changes when we realize what we're trading off or whatever. So, but how do you handle, like, who should have eyes on the budget? How do you handle things around, confidentiality or, HR spend or, wages or anything like that? Because I can see the marketing team saying, yeah, let's triple our spend. I can see how we can half our engineering team and we can be in the moon by Christmas. So, well, how much transparency do you typically see?
It's a great question. I would say usually in years one or two of operations, it would be done just how you described it. It'd be one or two people holed up in a room, basically making up numbers, right? And we'll add 10% here, we'll take away 10% there, we'll roll it out. Maybe you won't even give people visibility. It'll just be there for the board or the owners to see. And the marketing person that you allude to doesn't even really know they even have a budget. Or maybe they do, but there's not no real accountability built in. That is almost how it should be done in the first couple of years. But once you're a little more mature and you actually have more senior people, you want to, get the most out of those people. And one of the ways to do that is to bring them to the table. And you may not give, let's say, the head of marketing visibility to the whole budget, but you should give them visibility into their budget. Because part of that is not just, hey, what do you need to spend on events, on ad spend, on Google, whatever it is you're spending on. It's what's the ROI on that? Because I need to track that as well. How many leads are you expecting to get per channel, per month even? Because if you can't measure it, obviously you can't manage it, right? That's the old kind of saying there. But you want to give people metrics, and it actually does, it gets people invested in the company, invested in the process, and it gives them a measure of success, whether they hit it or not, is a conversation that happens throughout the year. But ideally, there is, particularly with marketing and sales, monthly check-ins, if not quarterly. But anyone, I mean, listen, a budget is only as good as there's a stakeholder attached to every single line item. And that stakeholder should not be you as the owner or founder. You should maybe have a few, but you certainly shouldn't be marketing. You certainly shouldn't be almost definitely sales or tech, just because you want to, the person who can sway it, who understands it, should be the person who owns it. And every single to a transactional level on a budget, when you dig into like vendors and spend, should have a person's name next to it. And every piece of the funnel, from business development to lease, opportunities, whatever you call them, should have a name next to it. And if it doesn't, it's gonna you're gonna have a very your budget will have very, very limited utility. and when you have to answer the inevitable question is, which will happen mid-year or early, why is there a variance? You'll make up an answer, but it probably won't be really right. Although I'm sure it'll sound right. So really anyone who can sway a number and understands it and is a decision maker should own that budget.
That's good. And then we get straight into like, because there's some of the ones that are really easy to understand. Like we're going to open up a new market. Okay, that's a new sales guy, whatever, 100 grand in ad spend, let's say, and whatever, and that we can get to that. And sales and marketing is, it's easier to put a number around it. Let's put it that way. And when it comes to things like success, you know, expansion revenue, stuff like that, it's a bit trickier if I say to my success team, okay, we want an extra 10% in expansion this year. I suppose we give them a budget, but sometimes it's not really about the budget, right? So that's, is that where the discussion is? It's like, well, if you had to get a 10%, what would you need? If money was no object, is that the sort of question you open up and say, what would you need?
So budgeting season, let's say we're early in the season. That is the perfect question to ask. You should be asking your marketing, your sales, whoever, customer success. What would it take to do that? That is the perfect question. So when you first start, it's sort of like, here's where we are now. We know it. We have a run rate. We have last month's actuals. Here's where I kind of want to be, right? 10% growth here, 20% there. Like, is this possible? And what would it take to make it possible? That is the perfect question to ask. And one of the outputs of the budget as you work through it, iteration versus iteration versus iteration, should be actually comp plans and incentive plans. So let's say you decide we're going to start, and there's no silver bullet here. There's no answer. This is how you commission expansion revenue. Like, I don't even know the best practice, but you might say, hey, any renewal you get 1% on that year's revenue. Any expansion, you get 2% or something like that. Start there. See what it looks like. Work out the math. Let's say you get your 10%. What is that earnings going to look like? And you'll change it. You know, when you put out these comp plans, particularly for sales and marketing and customer success, you want it to be clearly labeled 2024 comp plan, i.e. this won't be your comp plan for 2025. But it's really important to have it be clear. I've never seen anyone really not like a clear goalpost. What people hate are fuzzy goalposts. Like, this, are you going to be happy with 5% expansion? I don't know. You never really told me. Like, obviously higher is better, but for you to actually come out as a manager and say, hey, I want 10%. Let's make it happen. And if it does, here's what you get. People like that.
Yeah. It's like the old credit. Some people see their credit card limit as a limit. Some people see it as a target and they'll go for it. Yeah. Okay. Well, that's interesting. Cause I mean, there's always this juxtaposition between the company goals and what it means for people and their career progression. And I guess we've never really made it clear, like the perfect time to come and say will be, hey, if we hit this for benchmark engineering or whatever, then remember, let's talk about that in March when you're on for your review, right? So rather than coming at the last minute and saying, hey, I'd like an extra, whatever, 40% on my wages, please say, hey, rather, if I can get us this, would you consider 40% of my wages by March? And if the math makes sense, then absolutely, right? That's the right way to sort of look for, maybe it's a good opportunity to let everyone know this is your chance to make a mark on the company. And if it looks like it's working out, you know, then be ready for March.
So, yeah. So the answer to that is maybe, right? Maybe, because what's going to happen is you're going to set these metrics, these goals. You're going to work with your stakeholders, let's say the head of sales, head of marketing, head of product, head of customer success, whatever they are. They're going to see their little piece of the puzzle. And then you or whatever the management team is going to put the whole puzzle together and be like, whoa, okay, this looks nuts, right? We're either going to lose 20 million or it's going to look crazy. And that's where it really is, this kind of like ping pong game, this conversation, because you're going to have to probably go back to each stakeholder 3 to 5 times, right? The first time is just the first ask. What do you think you can do? Second one is, okay, let me start putting this together and thinking about kind of goals and metrics that might help you understand what the company needs, and putting comp attached to it. And then you put all the numbers together and you realize, okay, my net income equals, you know, negative $20 million because I gave everyone too much. It's just back and forth. So it really is a long process, but at the end of it, there should be something like that. And if you can find a way, like, it's relatively easy to clearly kind of incentivize and give goalposts to sales, marketing, customer success. But if you can find a way to do it for engineering, product, I mean, that's great. And no one really, I've never met anyone who didn't like a clear kind of metric. Hey, if you can deliver this on the product roadmap or whatever the metrics are, you're going to get a 20% bonus. That's a good thing to do, right? And even if you fudge it a little bit because they get most of the way there and you give it, like, you're not losing any integrity there by doing that. But yeah, I mean, so many companies, I can't tell you how many clients we have that just have no goalposts for anyone, except for maybe like two salespeople have like a quota, but everyone else is kind of just doing, I mean, they're all working hard and doing their best, but it's not really aligned. And if you do this budgeting right, everyone in the company should be aligned. And it's a long, thoughtful exercise, but everyone should be aligned and excited, and it should culminate in a company mission and statement.
So doing new things is one thing, but stop doing other things is something a budget will force you to. Like, if I want to pay for this new area, we're going to make a new territory, for example, hold on, let's look at all the stuff we're doing. Is it really serving us? So
it's the hardest thing in the world. Taking away is the hardest thing for some reason. And this is true, like, everybody everywhere. You know, talk to a financial analyst when they're putting together a presentation. Their first presentations are like 80 slides long because they just can't delete anything. It's very hard to take something away. But once you learn how to do it, it's usually okay. And then you can usually add it back if you have to. But I do encourage, you know, pruning, because it's one of those things, especially in the world of subscription, everything, right? Everything is a subscription. Everything auto-renews. You know, unless you take a hard look at this stuff, and I'm not encouraging what's called zero-based budgeting, which we don't even need to get into now, but it can be helpful to have that mindset. Like, what if we're building this from scratch? Really, would we add this back? You know, are we spending this much on Facebook? Are we getting anything for it?
So who have you seen, I'm going to use a word here, excitement around budgeting. So who have you seen that's really managed to get the team excited, if at all? Like, who does it really well, and what do you think they do that the rest of us might be missing?
Oof. First of all, it's like sort of like the Mount Everest maybe of like running a finance function is getting people engaged and excited. Because I think when a lot of people hear the word budget, they just roll, you know, it's just exhausting and a boring finance formality.
Second only to a purchase order, I'll tell you that much. Yeah, but anyway.
Yeah. Maybe that's that sounds about right. I think the way to do it and the way to get people interested is to really translate it into something that's meaningful to them. I mean, you can't go to somebody like the head of marketing with like an export from your P&L with like account numbers, and it doesn't mean anything to them. They don't care about accrual accounting. They don't care that you spread a cost out, or they just want to know. It doesn't mean anything to them. So usually it's, okay, let's say, they care about vendor level expenses because that's how they think of their world. They spent this much on this, and they don't care about accrual accounting. They care about cash accounting. So they probably want to look at a list of vendors. And when they think about ROI, they may not even really quantify it. So let's make sure that they have the capacity, whether it's within Salesforce, to make sure they're actually measuring the ROI. So if they're spending X dollars on Facebook, you know, what's that really generating? And are they looking at it and analyzing it? And it's a way to kind of, it puts you as a finance person into the world that they live in a little bit, because it lets you understand how they look at the world. It inevitably will not be the same as the world of an accountant who looks at things like a trial balance, and this isn't their world. They look at things like on a vendor level and spend. And then it's importantly a way to have a conversation about the other half of the equation. Okay, what are we getting for that? And it's a little trickier when you get deeper into the organization, like product and especially overhead. Like, what do you get for your finance spend on your internal accounting? Like, it's really hard to measure that. But it's a way to have a conversation. Like, how do you look at success in your role as the head of marketing? Like, let's look at it by channel. How do you look at success for Google spend? Is it, you know, engagement, web traffic, et cetera, et cetera? Because at the end of the day, you do need to translate it into something financial, but I would never start there. They should never look at a P&L or a trial balance. They shouldn't even know whatever your chart of accounts is, and however you've decided to name your accounts and number, that should be invisible to them. It should be a conversation about their business.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, you know, I joke with my accounting team that they have these sort of accounting lines straight out of Hogwarts. Like, what the hell is, you know, like currency fluctuation account or whatever? This stuff, it really means nothing to me and definitely won't mean anything to the operations team if you're a marketing or salesperson or engineer. Another thing I find, maybe it's a good way to get people used to the language of finance, is that sometimes we'll develop a feature. Let's say I don't know, it mightn't be anything crazy. It might be like a Dropbox, you know, for dropping invoices into, for example. And we'll review it, and it's not really working the way we want it to yet, and maybe no one's using it. You know, sometimes there's no adoption. And I'll say something like, well, you know, just bear in mind, we spent €250,000 building that. And they'll go, what? What do you mean? And then they'll be like, well, if you think about it, we had 3 people on it for a quarter. And then, you know, before that, we had the product manager working on it for a quarter, et cetera, et cetera. And then it's like, whoa, you know, a challenge there is they don't have a view of the full picture. So sometimes they can go the other way. They can think like, well, we're never going to try and build anything again. It's just too expensive. Or the other side is they go, well, as a proportion of our revenue, I suppose that's reasonable, which isn't right either. So it is a challenge. Maybe you have, if you break down the budgets to say the department level, you know, like, then at least they get used to, okay, normally it costs us this much to run this department. You know, if we're going to get an improvement in the department, then you can normalize it. But sometimes I have the experience where people are too conservative. They say, well, hold on, this vendor is going to charge us whatever, you know, even whatever, it could be $3,000 a month. I don't think it's worth it. I can do it in the back, I'll do it in a spreadsheet or whatever. And then you don't make progress either. So trying to naturalize the language of finance through the team is a good idea. Well, I admit I have not done it, you know, because it's too scary. You also are opening the kimono a bit. You feel like, you know, unless you have the full picture, you don't think about the taxes, you don't think about the, you know, all of the buffers and all the things, you know, and you feel like it's going to come back. But
if you're a SaaS company or just really any software tech company, the product roadmap is probably your biggest challenge when you're budgeting. And the way I try to frame it to my product people when I'm doing it is, listen, we're looking at the product roadmap. We're looking at a lot of features you're going to add on, maybe even modules, whatever it is, add-ons, et cetera, improvements. Like, the way I want you to think about it is, okay, is this a feature? And not to get too much in the weeds, just in SaaS and kind of B2B SaaS, but when you're thinking of this feature, is this something that you think users would expect it to have? Meaning, if we don't have it, we're probably going to lose market share because it's just assumed that, hey, if I'm getting budgeting software, of course it should have currency conversion. I'm making that up. Whatever it should be. Like, if it doesn't, it would be bizarre. It'd be like downloading a spreadsheet, but it doesn't have, like, you can't use formulas. Like, or cost extra if you want to use formulas. Like, we just expect it to happen. If it doesn't, you hurt brand loyalty and users will leave, right? So there are features like that that are really important to have and understand and how much they cost. You may not get direct payment for it. It may not be an additional fee, but if you don't have it, you're hurting yourself. You're really shooting yourself in the foot. Then there are features that are like sort of like enhancements, like delightful features that might impress or make users happy. I don't know if I can charge for it per se, but wow, they're really going to love our product because it does like these 5 things that most products don't do. And then there are like the third category is like, this is a big module. This is a big deal. Any other competitor that has it charges for it. Or it's like an enterprise thing. Like, this is the category of like, you know, as a user of software myself, and I'm sure yourself, like take my money, please. I will gladly pay for this. It's such a great feature. It is so useful. I don't expect to get it. So I try to, again, like in the product roadmap, and the product is the toughest conversation in budgeting, but it is critical. And that's at least how I try to translate it. Like, how are we looking at this feature? Just, you know, you always have to look at it because with product and engineering people, you know, the product is their baby. And sometimes they have trouble looking at it from the consumer and user standpoint, where it's like, actually, nobody cares about this graphing feature that you're spending like a year adding, because they just don't. And if you actually do, like, I'm not suggesting you do a ton of user surveys and things like that, but you know, you have to kind of marry those viewpoints. And it's a really critical part of budgeting, and it's a really hard part of it as well.
Oh, you're singing to the choir. It is so hard. I don't know. You've obviously got deep experience here, because it is the hardest thing about running a software company is, in theory, a guy called Keith Cunningham, he's a motivational speaker. He works with Tony Robbins and those guys. And his theory is, all you have to do to be successful in business, find out what people want, go and get it and give it to them in that order. And it's so, you would think that's easy. It's not easy, you know. Yeah. You know, the first 100 customers we had, you know, 99 customizations to get them over the line.
Yeah, that's always the case.
And then the next 100 was like, 50 customizations. And now we're like, but still, and then you have the competitors and all that. But then again, if it was easy, everybody would be doing it. But it's terrifying because each time you add a new feature, it's like almost like a new startup. Like, will people use this? Would they use this? I don't know. Are we fooling ourselves?
It is a tough, tough thing. Let's put it this way. No one's cracked the code on it. I have never worked with a client who probably hasn't spent double on development that they originally planned when they started the company. I don't think there's not one. And that's like a minimum. If you've only spent twice what you thought you were going to spend on development, you're probably amongst like the top 1% of prudent, frugal startups. You're an all-star.
Well, when we started off, we were three founders, and Jer, it was my job to sell the thing, his job to build it, and Rich was looking pretty. I don't know what he was doing. Anyway, and 3 months in, we had no new customers, and Jer's like, James, you're great, but I'm sorry, I'm off to Canada or whatever he was doing. He's like, this isn't working out. He says, okay, we'll buy you. We bought him out for $5,000, and then a couple of years later, I'm talking to a friend of mine, and said, yeah, we actually, we bought it for $5,000 and now we're doing this. And he's like, oh, that's great. And then, what's your engineering team like? And I gave him an idea. And at the time he was like, okay, so you bought it for $5,000 and then you spent like $500,000 fixing it. Is that right? Is that what I heard? I was like,
when you put it that way.
Yeah. Yeah. And the maintenance is, we could get into the capitalization of that cost and everything. Like it's weird. I mean, also your point about cash accounting, I think it has to be for the operations team. Like it's just not possible for us to get our head around all that. That's where, it needs to be like translatable to them when they're looking at their budget. Everyone can understand, I've got to save for Christmas. Everyone can get their head around that, and it just gets way too hard once you start accruing things. And
whoever's tasked with like coordinating the budget, it really is like a masterful facilitation exercise where you are talking to every stakeholder in their own language, returning it, including leadership and vision and all that. You're talking to everyone in their own language. You're putting it onto a spreadsheet or something, translating everything into finance and accounting. And then going back to every person and taking that and then retranslating it back into their language to come to something that is like palatable and hopefully gets people excited when it comes to the budget and actually achievable because people have goals. Everyone is aligned at that point. But you really do have to speak in their language. And let me tell you, the language of every stakeholder is never accounting. It's never like, hey, I'm going to show you our trial balance from last year and use that to do your budget. Like, it's not a recipe for success.
Okay, well, let's wrap it up by just talking about you've talked about what I've learned from this already is it's a discussion, it's an iteration, which is not what we've been doing, to be honest. It's been tablets handed down from high, if I'm honest, in what we're doing. But it's like a back and forth, which is interesting. We talked about running it into comp plans, which is interesting because now's the time to do it, not when the budgets are set. And then when it actually comes to rollout, like day to day, before people sign the contract or do whatever they're going to do to commit that fund, like what's the best way to roll that out through the year?
Usually what I do is sort of roll out the final piece of the budget for everybody. And at that point, there's nothing new. Like we've already been back and forth with the head of marketing a million times. They get it, but this is your final 2024 budget. Usually people are more interested and excited to get it than you might think. Because at the end of the day, it's about giving people autonomy. It's saying, hey, you run marketing. We've had a lot of conversations. You have X number of dollars. And as the head of finance, you don't have to ask me for authorization. I mean, usually I kind of leave headcount separate. For hiring, there is some sort of authorization requirement. For everything else, if you want to mix stuff up and spend less on Google, like that's your job as a manager. Make that decision. But this is your budget, and I'm going to oftentimes I just do like a quarterly kind of email and say, yeah, here's where things are, assuming they're roughly in line. If they're not, maybe it's a meeting. I try not to do it more than quarterly because, again, I don't want these people like living and breathing finance. I want them living and breathing their role and doing their job. When people are interested, oftentimes they will come to me and say, hey, what's my budget? What do I have left? I mean, they're just naturally sort of interested in it. But I would recommend at least a quarterly because ideally once the budget's done per department, it should also be by month or by quarter. So it shouldn't just be like, here's your annual budget. It should be, here's your quarterly. And keep an eye on a quarterly. And What it does is it gives the stakeholders a lot of autonomy. They get to run their department. They don't need to come to the head of finance or anyone to ask permission to buy like a canvas tote bag for whatever it is. Like, go for it. You already have the collateral budget in there. I don't need to hear from you, right? Just do your thing. And then I'll check in with you once a quarter. But I would say a quarterly check-in is probably the norm. And if they're pretty much on target, it's usually an email saying, hey, if you want to meet, happy to, but here's an email summary of where you thought you'd be, where you are, everything looks okay. It's usually kind of where I leave it.
I should mention, I cannot mention it. My question was a little bit self-serving because, you know, obviously with Procurement Express, that's one of the key things we do is the ability for people to log in, see where they are on budget. Sometimes finance teams are allergic to the word in real time, but as much as, you know, you have at least a real time guide on where your budget is. So when, before you raise the PO, that's the time to consider your budget, not after. And another thing that, you know, a system, and, you know, we are one of many, there's, you know, approve.com, Procurify, there's loads of great systems out there that will, before you make the spend decision, you can see where your budget is in real time. And then you can make the decision then. But another big one is then you don't have to sort of shoot holes in someone's calendar asking them for budget updates. Everyone's looking at the golden record. And then that is a big productivity boost, you know, for the finance team and the operations team, you know.
No, agree. And here was one thing that surprised me when I first started running a finance function is that almost every stakeholder or manager I worked with, they are like genuinely interested in what's my budget. It's like a sense of just knowledge, empowerment. I don't know what it is, but like they're running a business almost. They're all excited and interested by it. So like, honestly, yes, I may send out a quarterly or monthly snapshot, but being able to log in, I think would actually be of interest to people because it surprised me. I always thought it was kind of like a bit of a dirty word, like my budget and my over budget, but actually people are interested. They're excited by it. And they like to see how they're doing against budget, you know?
All right, Brian, listen, I really appreciate chatting with you. It was a lot of fun. I learned something definitely about budgeting. What I'm going to do, take away from this is I'm going to do more iterations. I'm going to open the kimono a bit more. I'm going to give people the power to have a look at, you know, how the budgets are and everything. And especially what you were saying about product, I think is actually can take away what's table stakes, what's a hygiene factor, what can make people go, wow, and what will people pay for? Maybe that's actually the perfect way to look at it, you know, because what making people go, wow, is our thing. So yeah, I love that idea.
There you go.
So how can people reach out to you if they're, you know, first of all, like, I mean, you know, who's a good customer for Propeller? Who should reach out to you if they want some help?
Listen, if you're a small business that has gotten to the point that has grown a little bit, that maybe has got some funding that all of a sudden needs to have a little more financial insight, either for operational purposes, we need to like just manage better, or for stakeholder purposes, if they have investors that need financials that are, you know, more right, more better. Like we're kind of that step in maturity. So once you've kind of grown a little bit and need, you know, better insight into your own business, into your own financial situation, it really is part and parcel to planning the future of your company, to understanding what you're capable of from like a capital standpoint, is just having some financial insight, and being able to plan forward, being able to plan next year, next month, next quarter, and especially if you have stakeholders that actually want or require perhaps better financials, we're a good place for that. I mean, Propeller Industries, all of our clients pretty much are startups or small businesses, so who kind of reach that stage when just providing a tax return for your financials isn't quite acceptable anymore. So we're a good solution, and we do. Because it's sort of all in one, we do the bookkeeping, we process invoices and create invoices through CFO. It really creates a nice ecosystem where because really everything is tied together. So we're talking about budgeting right now. But the truth is, if you're getting invoices in and someone in your bookkeeping department is coding them to the wrong place, it makes it really hard to have an accurate budget or tell someone what their budget is when you're putting everything to the wrong place. So for us, having this one contained ecosystem, bookkeeping up to CFO, it's a really valuable tool when you are looking to plan ahead and understand where you are today.
I think that's essential now, seeing where we are, because if the GL isn't in the shape it needs to be, and the income statement or P&L isn't in the shape it needs to be, then everyone's talking a different language straight away. Like if you're not thinking ahead about this stuff like budgeting, it's too late by the time you've been using your GL in the wrong
form. Yeah, you're already in trouble.
All right. Well, Brian, thank you very much for coming. I hope we got something good out of that for our listeners. I know it's bang on our market or our listenership is people who are growing fast in companies. So you can reach out to you at propellerindustries.com. And yeah, thanks a million.